Welcome to the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. My name is Sean Coleman, and joining me again tonight is Grant Hall. Grant, just wanted to thank you this week for joining us, and definitely am excited to wrap up this week's worth of shows. Tonight, we're going to have some exciting conversation. We're going to focus less on the court itself and the game itself, and we're going to look more at the experience of yesteryear as well as, recent history. A couple of different topics we're going to discuss. Me and Grant are going to go through a list of the 10 best 90s NBA jerseys. With the NBA putting a focus on retro jerseys this year, the Grizzlies, obviously, the Raptors, amongst other teams, we're going to rank the top 10 90s jerseys that seemed like that was the era where fashion really took on a meaning of its own. So we're going to focus on the top 10 1990s jerseys. And then me and Grant are going to go through our list of the five most memorable games that we've experienced personally in Grizzlies history. So, Grant, let's get this started. Looking at the top 10 list, what I'm simply going to do, I know that you've made out a list. I'm going to certainly give my feedback, but I'm going to start with number 10. Grant, looking at the top 10 jerseys from the 1990s, in your opinion, number 10 on the list is?
Yeah, so it was a tough list to put together to just pick out 10. There's a lot of jerseys and stuff to go through the 90s, a lot of flashy stuff. But with number 10, I went with the Sonics. So the Sonics had two different jerseys in the 90s. So from 1985 to 1995 was kind of what I think is probably their most popular, is when they kind of had the bright green with the large Sonics across the chest. They're actually one of the first teams in the NBA when they debuted this jersey in the 80s to have like that large font with their name across the chest. It's kind of like the bright green and yellow, kind of similar to the Oakland A's colors. They had a jersey that they went to later after 95 into the 96 season, was more of like a dark green color with the kind of the Sonics logo kind of, or Sonics font going sideways. I didn't prefer that jersey as much. So at number 10 is that Sonics jersey that debuted in the mid 80s, but lasted up until 1995.
When the Sonics were playing the Bulls in the finals, I was a fan of their jerseys as well. The dark green with the cursive font, I actually was not too. I thought that it was awesome. But, yes, with Gary Payton and Sean Kemp in their prime, I can certainly say that was one of the more memorable ones, especially with the fact that the Sonics made it unexpectedly to the finals, as a opponent for the Bulls in the early 90s. Number 9 on the list of top 10 90s NBA jerseys is?
Yeah, so with number 9, I went with the Houston Rockets. And so they also kind of split the 90s with two different jerseys. They had like the kind of the same color scheme with that red and yellow from the 70s into the 90s. But I went with their blue jersey with the pinstripes that we saw Barkley wearing. They had these from 95 to 2003. It was one of the loudest jerseys and logos, in my opinion, during the 90s. It had that red basketball with the blue background with the rocket flying around. And then on the court, they had the huge rocket coming out the sidelines. It was just one of the more loud jerseys. I just thought it was really kind of an iconic jersey. It kind of just really represents what the 90s kind of looked like in the NBA. It was loud. It was big, with the big Rockets font going across that logo. It's kind of busy from a distance, but when you get up close on it, it's actually pretty cool. The way the rocket kind of swirls around the basketball is actually what forms the lines through the basketball, and I think it's just kind of really creative the way that logo works. And then with the jersey, putting that huge logo right there on the front and then having those the pinstripes down the going across around the jersey, I just think really made it stand out as one of the more loud jerseys from that era that I just really think is pretty cool.
And the thing that I'll say about that is, to me, that was the most iconic jersey that at least Charles Barkley ever wore. But the pinstripe concept, one you haven't really seen. They tried it. It was one of those things. It was a jersey concept that worked for a while, that ran its course. But there was, you know, there was some swag. It was. I don't know if you fans follow too much of wrestling, but they used to have a faction called the Main Street Mafia in TNA wrestling. And it was all the older wrestlers who had come together to form just like an uber elite group. Well, when you had Pippen and Barkley and Drexler and Hakeem Olajuwon and all those guys together, that was kind of like the Main Street Mafia, a group of veteran, you know, Hall of Famers just playing together. They could pull off the swag, but in time, you know, it ran its course. But I will say it's one of the most memorable ones. Don't necessarily know if it's the best, obviously, but one of the more memorable. Number 8 on the list, Grant.
Yeah, so with number 8, I think this is one that people either love or hate. And honestly, it's not really one of my favorites, just kind of looking at, but just thinking about the players who wore it really kind of makes it stick out in my memory. And that's, I think, the kind of the reason I went with this next one in the top 10. So number 8, I went with the Pistons, the teal jersey that, you know, had the horse that's on fire. And, you know, everybody thinks of Grant Hill when you think of that jersey. I actually owned that exact Grant Hill jersey when I was a kid. So that was actually my first NBA jersey that I ever, my parents ever purchased for me, was that teal green Detroit Pistons Grant Hill jersey. I'm sure as many people of my age at that time, Grant Hill was one of our favorite players to see play. So the Pistons, they brought this jersey out. They were kind of doing a rebranding from their, you know, the blue and red Detroit Pistons, which they've obviously gone back to as of now, but they were kind of trying to get away from their old identity of the, you know, the bad boys from the 80s and the early 90s, and they kind of try to get a new look. It's almost like a sore thumb when you look back at kind of their history, but when Grant Hill is the one that's wearing that jersey, that's really why that I just, when I look back at that jersey, that I just like it so much, because I remember Grant Hill when he got there wearing that jersey, and it was just one that really stands out to me that I really like.
I actually think that jersey should be higher on the list personally. I'll wait, though, until I hear the rest of your list. But, yes, I do think that the color scheme of that was bold, but it was good. The teal with the blue and a little bit of, you know, red, it definitely had a vibrant color to it. And I agree, you know, the Grant Hill is one of the biggest what-if talents in the 90s, you know, along with Penny Hardaway and others. But I do agree with you. I do like that look. It was a simple concept that worked, and it was one of the stronger jersey-based mixtures that I remember from the 90s. So I agree with you. It was a very good concept that the Pistons were able to put together. Number 7, Grant, on the list of top 10 jerseys in the 1990s.
All right, so number 7, I've got the Charlotte Hornets. So they also kind of had a teal look. This one's kind of more of kind of a simple jersey compared to most of the ones of the 90s. But I really like the way that this one kind of looked with that teal color. And then they used a pinstripe. They used pinstripes as well, but they did it kind of in a different way. So it wasn't just the white pinstripes going around. They had the different colors alternating with their color scheme around their jersey. And I just think it's a real classic look. It was kind of, you know, the Charlotte Hornets are going to be bringing back that jersey this year. And it kind of just looks like a jersey that would be worn now. So it's a little bit ahead of its time. But I really think it was a nice, clean jersey. In the 90s, they actually debuted it in the late 80s in 89 and then wore it up until 96. But I really like it. I really think it, just looking back on the Charlotte Hornets before they moved to New Orleans, they even kind of had that jersey in New Orleans, but it just didn't look right with New Orleans going across the chest rather than when it had Charlotte going across the chest, when they kind of had some fun teams to watch during that time. But yeah, the Hornets is number 7.
And that's the thing about it. I think the modern day version of that is the football team that plays in Charlotte that just absolutely crapped the bed tonight. And that would be the Carolina Panthers. You know, again, a simple concept with teal, but it's such a vibrant color itself that if you could pull it off, it works well. And I like the fact, you know, another pinstripe jersey. I like the fact that they just went with that as the base and the feature. And yes, it was a good look, especially with Larry Johnson and Alonzo Mourning wearing it. Number six on your list, Grant.
Number six, I've got the Phoenix Suns. So when I think back to this jersey, I picture Jason Kidd, you know, rocking this bright purple jersey with the huge orange basketball that's kind of inside the sun that's, you know, shooting across the chest. It's one of those, you know, those loud jerseys from the 90s that I just really think just stands out. And it just kind of goes really well with, you know, the Phoenix Suns name. You know, trying to come up with a color scheme for a team like the Suns, is you could really go with anything, but that purple and orange with that orange sun just kind of really goes well. They also had a black alternate that went with it that I think really looked good as well. But I really like the purple just because it was just real bright and vibrant out there on the court. And I think it just looked really good at the jersey. And, you know, with Jason Kidd, you know, rocking it in the 90s, I think it was one of my favorites. Obviously, they put it at number six. So
I think that the concept, that the logo concept of the Suns was very unique and one of the better ones of the 90s. You know, obviously it was you know, that was the next evolution of the one that, you know, Barkley and his Suns had when they met the Bulls in the finals. But yeah, I do agree. I think that the Suns was there was a lot going on with the, you know, a lot of bright colors, but it looked good. And especially with the background, which, you know, again, you know, put, if you're going to go loud with the logo, you need to go simple with the background and vice versa. And I think that the Suns hit on it pretty well. Looking at number four, Grant, on your list of 1990s NBA logos, believe we're at number four. Well, five, four. We should be at four, right?
Well, actually, you're skipping ahead. We're actually going to go to number five next. So at number five, I think this is kind of a sleeper. I think, and one reason I think this one doesn't get thought of too much is it actually debuted in the 80s. So the Denver Nuggets jersey, kind of that royal blue jersey with the skyline and the mountains in the background with kind of like the rainbow sunset behind it. I just really love. I just love the bright colors, the way it stands out. I think it looks awesome. I really think that they messed up when they went away from it. So this jersey actually debuted in 85, and actually they kind of changed their branding after the 1993 season. They went kind of with more of a well, the logo looks kind of similar to what it looks like today, or the last logo they used, but it was the like dark blue and gold and red. And I really just don't think those colors went really well together. So before they had that, with that rainbow jersey with the skyline and the mountains, I just think worked really well. It's kind of busy from a distance, but up close, you see the details to that jersey. And it's just really nice. And it's really unique in the sense that most of the jerseys, especially today, you just have the team name or the team city across the chest and underneath it, the number. Whereas this one across the chest and the stomach is that skyline and the mountains and all that color. And then kind of like underneath that, lower on the jerseys, where it actually says Nuggets. But the focus of the jersey is that skyline and the mountains and the sunset. And I just really love the way that pops. And I just, it's one of the jerseys that, and they actually, I think, brought that back a couple of years ago to kind of use as an alternate, which I really like to see. But it's definitely one of my favorites to look back on.
And I agree with you completely as well. Whenever you get that, if you do it right, if you can get a silhouette type setup with the city as a background, so many cool concepts can come from it. And I think that the Nuggets definitely hit on theirs. I agree. It's one of my favorite nostalgic jerseys. And I just don't think it ever really caught on at the time that it was active, because the Nuggets, they weren't a big team back then. They were kind of like the Grizzlies in a smaller market that, you know, yeah, people knew they played basketball, but they never were really relevant back then. But I do agree with you. I think it's one of the more underrated jerseys of the 90s. Now, number four, Grant, looking to get in the top four of the 1990s top 10 NBA jerseys.
All right, so going to number four, this next one I think every NBA fan, even if you weren't a fan of the 90s, is familiar with. And the Utah Jazz are bringing it back this season. So we're actually going to see Mike Conley rocking this jersey, which is going to be very strange and going to have to be a little bit of an adjustment. But so at number four, got the Utah Jazz with the jersey they rocked from 1996 to 2004. So it's that purple jersey with kind of that white, you know, snow-capped mountain in the background that we, of course, saw, you know, John Stockton and Karl Malone rocking when they were Actually, it's kind of an unfortunate thing for the Jazz maybe to look back to losing back-to-back finals to Michael Jordan and the Bulls. But the jersey itself, I think, is just a classic. I think it's just one of the best ones that you can look back on. I know purple isn't always most popular color for a sports team to wear necessarily, especially it's not really like a dark purple and black like the Ravens wear. It's like a really bright purple, a little bit of blue on that mountain, but I just think it looks really clean, really good, especially when you put it up to some of those other, you know, iconic jerseys of the 90s. I think it just really stands out, and it's just a really clean, nice jersey.
That actually is my favorite jersey from that area. It's just it's so memorable, and it's going to be hard for me not to buy a Conley 10 jersey with that. But that was my favorite jersey of the 90s by far. Just a cool concept, an awesome representation of a small market that a lot of people remember. And so I think that it was probably my favorite jersey concept of the 90s. On your list, though, number three, Grant, who brings us into the top three of the top 10 jerseys of the 90s?
All right. So going to number three, I know a lot of listeners might be upset at this, that this isn't the number one on my list. But for me, number three was the Vancouver Grizzlies, that bright turquoise that we will be seeing the Memphis Grizzlies, John Morant, Jaren Jackson Jr. and company rocking this year. I think this one, along with Toronto, might be maybe the most famous popular jersey of maybe in NBA history. It's just really, it's really iconic, and it really pops. That turquoise is really loud. It's really bright. They've got the pattern that goes around the sleeves and the neck that just is really large and bold and really stands out. And that jersey is just really loud. The Grizzlies font going across the chest is huge. It's really big, really large. And I just think it's really one of the most iconic jerseys in NBA history. I mean, it was only worn for six seasons while they were in Vancouver. Unfortunately, they didn't bring that jersey with them to Memphis. I think it would have been really cool to have the Grizzlies have worn that in Memphis for even a year or two before they changed their branding here in Memphis. I think the reason they didn't go with that is because most of the elements with that jersey kind of tie in to the Vancouver area, the Pacific Northwest, so it didn't really make a lot of sense to bring that to Memphis. But I'm excited to see the Grizzlies wear it, even if it does say Vancouver Grizzlies across the chest. I think it's just one of the classic, not only NBA jerseys, but just sports jerseys in general. You see people wearing the old, you know, Vancouver Mike Bibby jersey and Big Country. You see those all over the country, not just at Grizzly games, but you'll see people wearing that jersey all over the place. So I think it's one of the most popular of all time, and it's really great.
And I'll say this about that jersey concept is that has to be one of the more iconic short logo concepts as well, with the Grizzly on the side. And I wish they would have incorporated that on the jersey itself instead of the large font, but with the short combination with that font concept, it was memorable. Loud, yes, but memorable. Getting into the top two, Grant, who is second on your list?
So putting the top two was tough. I really went back and forth between these last two. I love both of these jerseys a lot. But with number two, I went with the purple Toronto Raptors jersey that they used when they started out in 1995. They only had it for, I think, five seasons, but I think it's one of the best jerseys in NBA history. I mean, obviously, I put it at number two, even ahead of the Vancouver jersey. I just think the color scheme, that purple and the red, they just really go well together. That Raptor on the front, I just think it's really unique. I mean, the Grizzlies had like a ferocious grizzly bear, you know, claw on a basketball, but the Toronto Raptors had more of a like cartoony, not really friendly looking raptor, but not really a ferocious raptor, kind of like the Grizzlies look. It was just a raptor on the front of a jersey, actually wearing a jersey that wasn't the actual Toronto Raptors jersey. And he had shoes on that had claws. It was just a very unique design and jersey concept. And they actually incorporated the pinstripes on that as well, but they did something a little bit different with it. They were a little bit kind of a jagged pinstripe that kind of alternated the black and the gray around that jersey. And I mean, I think any time that you think about the Toronto Raptors history, you know, when they first got there to Toronto, you think about Vince Carter wearing that purple jersey. So I was excited the Raptors are bringing that jersey back, but they're actually not going to bring the purple one back. They're bringing the white. I think they both look great. But actually looking back at my top 10, all of these jerseys that I'm ranking are actually the road jerseys. I prefer the ones that have the color. I just think the way all these designs worked back in the 90s, they didn't really look great on the white jersey. If you've ever go back and look at that Vancouver Grizzlies jersey on the white jersey rather than the turquoise, it just doesn't have the same effect. And that's the same with the Toronto Raptors and a lot of these other ones that I think they look a lot better with the road actual main color as the jersey focus.
And again, you know, reiterating the point, you know, you can come up with the greatest logo font concept that you want to, but if it doesn't gel well with the background, it takes away from it. So a lot of these top three, top four jerseys, the background served just as much of a purpose as all that was going on with the font, the logo, and all that. Wrapping us up with the top jersey of the 1990s in the NBA, Grant, what you got?
All right, so this is another jersey that I owned when I was growing up. So I mentioned I owned the Detroit Pistons Grant Hill jersey, and I'm sure many, many other kids and adults at that time in Memphis owned an Orlando Magic Penny Hardaway jersey or even a Shaquille O'Neal jersey. So I, at number one, I've got that Orlando Magic, the black with the pinstripes that they wore all through the 90s when Penny and Shaq were playing together. I really think that's just one of the best jerseys that I've ever seen in the NBA. And I really wish that the Magic would go back to it. Even though it was what they used in the 90s, it doesn't really go with kind of the whole concept of the 90s where you had the loud colors and patterns. I think that jersey still works well with today's NBA. And I really, ever since the Magic have left that kind of that branding and that look, I just don't like the way it looks. I love what they wore in the 90s with Penny and Shaq. And maybe that's because I'm a little bit biased as a Penny fan growing up, but I just really think that jersey was iconic with the black, with the white pinstripes and the royal blue numbers. It was just really clean, really good. And it's obviously a great jersey.
Well, I think the reason why it may just have been as memorable, but without being loud itself, the loudness of Shaq and Penny, they were a concept well before their time. Their concept of playing was very much into the future now versus, you know, what the NBA was in the past. And so I agree with you. Those jerseys are iconic. The black on black, it just seems like always black on black makes sense when it comes to a jersey. It seems like a lot of teams go to that concept or their own version of that concept. But I do agree. I think that they probably would come in second after the Toronto Raptors jersey. In my opinion, my top three would be Utah, Toronto's, then Orlando's. But I do agree with you. I think that the Magic probably are the most iconic jerseys, you know, just as much for the players that played for them as the concepts themselves. So that's our top 10 jerseys from the 1990s, and we're going to take a quick break. But when we come back here on Locked On Grizzlies, we're going to go into our five most memorable games that me and Grant have attended in our time as Grizzlies fans. We'll be right back with you here on Locked On Grizzlies. Welcome back to the second half of this episode of Locked On Grizzlies. Again, my name is Sean Coleman. You can follow me on Twitter at StatsSAC. You can follow the show at Locked On Grizz. You can follow Mark King, your regular host, at King_producer. And you can follow Grant, the new contributor for Mark here on the Locked On Grizzlies Patreon page. You can follow him at GRANTTIS. So, Grant, looking at the history of being a Grizzlies fan. Now, I've done a 3&D podcast with you and your wife. It was one of my more memorable ones where we talked about your fandom. But you have been to hundreds of games in your time frame. And so we're going to have some fun with ranking the top five games that we both have attended. So, Grant, I'll start with you. Your fifth most memorable game of all time.
All right. So, Sean, I got to be honest. When I put together this list, I didn't actually put it together with the top five that I attended. So I went back and just kind of thought about all the Grizzlies games that I both attended and just watched and which ones really stood out to me. So of these five, I think I was at three of them because they were all at home. But I've actually got two road games on here that I just had to actually three road games on here. I take that back that I had to include, because I just think looking back on those games, and even watching them on TV, they just really stand out in my mind. I think moving forward would be games that I'll always remember. So of these top five, they're not all the games that I have attended myself. But that being said, and before I say number five, I will say this list is very hard to put together. Putting together a top five most memorable Grizzlies game list is very difficult. There was like 20 games at least in my head that I felt like deserved to be in the top five. So anyone listening to this, I know that they would probably have a different ranking, and I wouldn't argue with anyone, because I think anyone could put together their own top five and it would be perfectly fine. But with my number five, I think is actually a little bit of a shock. I actually have November 30th, 2018. So this is past season at Brooklyn. It was a double overtime win. We beat the Nets 131 to 125. So it was definitely not one of those grit and grind era type games. However, I chose this game because it is the most memorable game for me from last year and from Jaren Jackson Jr.'s rookie season. And I think just going forward, as Jaren Jackson Jr. Develops his game and becomes hopefully that the all-star that we all see in him to be, I think this game from his rookie year is always going to stand out to me in my mind. And it's that game he scored 36 points. But the Grizzlies were down at the very end by 7 points with under 30 seconds to go. And Mike Conley drove into the lane, kicked it out to Jaren Jackson Jr., put up a three, got knocked down, put the three in, 4-point play. And then right after that, he was the one to start the steal to get the ball back. And they drew up a play for him to shoot a three from about 5 feet behind the arc and just drained it like it was nothing. And so in about 15 seconds, Jaren Jackson Jr. put in 7 points and brought the Grizzlies right back into the game and sent it to overtime. He scored another bucket in that double overtime to put him at 36 points, his career high. I know that's probably not a game that a lot of people would put in their top five most memorable, but I think for me going forward, it's going to be one that I always remember from Jaren Jackson Jr.'s rookie season and just kind of where we really first saw him just explode on the offensive end.
Number five for me, I was not, I did not attend the game, but I was in Martin, Tennessee, where I am from, and I was watching the game at home with my dad and brother before I went back home. And it's actually a loss. It was the game seven loss that the Grizzlies played the Clippers. The Grizzlies were up huge, and it looked like that they were going to be able to really make a difference. This wasn't game seven. This was game one. Yeah, this was game one, I believe. But Grant, correct me if I'm wrong. Was it game seven or game one? Yeah, it was game one.
Yeah, it was game one of that series. Yep.
Game seven they wound up losing, but game one it was of the same series. I'm thinking of game one, but it was the game in which the Grizzlies were up, and it just seemed like that they were easily going to cruise to victory. But Nick Young could not be stopped at the towards the end of the fourth quarter, and the Clippers wound up coming back to win after the Grizzlies had been up like 28. And it was just the reason why I remember that so vividly is because there was such a change of emotion in such a short time frame, going from really feeling like this team could emerge as a surprise contender that year to come out of the West to just absolutely losing all hope, you know, in about 30 minutes to an hour. But I remember that game so vividly. So in terms of most memorable, that's number five for me. Grant, number four for you.
Yeah, before going into number four, I will say if I'm truly going most memorable, that would probably be in my top five. I was kind of going towards more of the positive feelings back towards looking at games. But, yeah,
embrace
that one is definitely
negative. Embrace the negative, Grant. Just embrace
it. Yeah, no. And I was at that game with a buddy of mine, and I was ecstatic for, 40 minutes. And then the last eight, it just didn't go our way, and it was a bad feeling. But that being said, going to my number four most memorable game, I've got May 5th, 2015. This was game two at Golden State. It was the Mike Conley game. So this was his first game coming back from breaking his face in that Portland series. So, everybody remembers Conley broke his face in the Portland series. We went on to win that series, of course, and then we had to face the Warriors in game one in Golden State without Mike Conley. We held our own, but we really weren't in that game. And so we got the news that Mike Conley was coming back for game two. Everyone was excited, but also we really did not know what to expect from Mike, you know, coming back from an injury like that, especially so quickly. I think is one reason. I mean, even if he didn't have the game that he had, just the fact that he was willing to go out there and put everything on the line for his teammates and the city of Memphis, I think is really just kind of what cemented Mike Conley into like the history of, you know, this city and this franchise. But that being said, Mike Conley did come back and had an amazing game. He put up 22 points. He was 8 of 12 from the field. You know, came out from the get-go just playing his heart out and led the team to that game to win, tied up the series, and then brought us back home to win another one that put us up before, of course, Golden State would end up going on to win that series. But that game two, seeing Mike come back on the road, even taking a hit from Draymond to the face in that game, it just really, we saw the heart of Mike Conley in that game. And I think that one is one that I'll always remember probably most when it comes to Mike Conley.
Number four for me was actually my first ever Grizzlies game. I was working at a local financial institution. My supervisor had reached out earlier that day to another coworker of mine and invited us to the game with his dentist. And we actually got seats that were six rows up in one of the end caps and in one of the end of the courts. And the reason why I remember that so vividly, Grant, I don't even remember the score. We were playing the Thunder. But I just remember seeing Kevin Durant and James Harden and Russell Westbrook and I think Serge Ibaka and just being amazed at how big these guys are. You don't realize how big these guys are on TV because they're surrounded by similar, you know, size guys. But when you're down low and you're seeing them in person, it was just eye-opening to see how well these big guys can move and you know, just dominate, you know, a game. And so that to me was number four on my list, just my first encounter with seeing how truly big a lot of these NBA players are. Looking at number three for you, Grant, what do you have?
All right. So at number three, I think everybody remembers this game. I remember it probably a little bit differently than most people. I actually lived in Montgomery, Alabama at this time. I was working for a minor league baseball team. I was just out of college a year prior to this game. So just trying to make my way into, you know, into life after college. And so I didn't have a lot of money. I had an apartment, but I had no cable. And so this is kind of a funny story. I had to go to the gym that was on site at my apartment complex to actually watch a few Grizzly games. We luckily had Grizzly games in Montgomery, Alabama, just because they were the closest team to Montgomery. But this game is the February 8th, 2011 game. The Tony Allen All Heart Grit Grind game. So it's when we were at Oklahoma City, Tony Allen was playing. Rudy Gay was out that game, but Tony Allen put up 27 points, had like five steals, three blocks. It was an overtime win against Kevin Durant and the Thunder. It was just a huge win that year for us. That was the year that we first made the first playoff run of the grit and grind era with the core four. And so that win was just a big win in general, but it was Tony Allen putting up 27 points was just so unique to see. And then of course the post game interview, you know, the all heart grit grind, everyone will always remember that quote. It's, you know, even today and, you know, post this G&G era, we still say, you know, grit and grind. So that game, and really just that moment, I mean, even not even just the game itself, the interview, the Tony Allen quote is just going to be something that's always one of the most memorable moments in Grizzlies history.
Number three for me was the game five clinching victory and the Tayshaun Prince dunk the year that we beat the Thunder to go to the Western Conference Finals. I believe it was 14-15. But that game was just absolutely unbelievable. Seeing the Grizzlies' ability to be able to, even with them not having Russell Westbrook, seeing the Grizzlies' ability to be able to dominate defensively, one of the best players of our generation in Kevin Durant, and just taking the series out of his hands and making it to where others had to beat them. Others did not step up to do that. But that game, basically clinching the chance to go further than we ever had before, was amazing. Now, us going and getting swept by the Spurs, you know, you know, that's just the narrative that was written. But I really do think that there was a lot of positives that came from that. And, you know, just, you know, that was truly, I feel that was truly the game where Memphis peaked. having the chance to clinch, to go to a level that they had not been before, they answered, and they answered quickly. And so, unfortunately, we never won a title, you know, with the grit and grind area, but that, if that was the closest we came, it was a fun ride while it lasted. Grant, getting into your top two, what's the second most memorable game of your Grizzlies fandom?
All right, so at number two, I actually think probably a lot of people would rank this number one, but me personally, I have it at number two. So this was in 2011, that first playoff run, game six against the Spurs when we knocked them off and finally won our first playoff series. The FedEx Forum, you know, was just unreal. It was electric. And Zach Randolph, that entire series, just owned San Antonio. And I remember specifically in that game, we were up for most of the game, but San Antonio, with Tim Duncan and Ginobili and company, they made a run in the fourth quarter, but then Z-Bo just put the team, put the city really on his back. And, I mean, he ended the game with 31 points, which that of itself is huge, but doing it in a game six to clinch the first ever playoff series victory in not even just Memphis history, but the entire franchise history was just huge. And I just remember that game being just so so loud and so crazy. Everyone was just so full of energy and excited. And then even after the game, the party didn't end. Everybody was, you know, flooding out of the Forum, chanting Z-Bo, going straight to Bill Street. It's just one of those moments that will just, I think anyone that was at that game, or even if you weren't at the game, just watching it on TV, will just always remember, you know, for the rest of, you know, our lives as Grizzly fans. I think it's just one of those iconic moments in franchise history.
Number two for me, I want to say that that's it too. And that's what's crazy about it for me, is that when it comes to that being number two, it's so hard to put it there because it was such a meaningful game. It likely was probably the second biggest win in Grizzlies history after that victory in Oklahoma City. But I'm going to go number two as well, because I think we're going to both have the same number one. But I was there also. I was at the very top. I've always said that at the FedEx Forum during a playoff game, I like to sit up top to see the fans and their reaction just as much as I do the players. But that game, clinching our first ever playoff victory, that I will always remember, especially being lucky enough to be there. Grant, number one on your list.
All right. So, yeah, number one on my list comes in 2013, and it was a first round, game six, clinching the series against the Clippers. So, you know, the Clippers rivalry has kind of died in the last few years as you know, Blake Griffin and Chris Paul, and pretty much that entire Clippers roster has moved on. But back then at that time, you know, in that 3-4-5 window, or 3-4-5 year window, we just really had a real hatred for the Clippers. And so, especially in that season, you had mentioned the game, I think it was number five for you, where we had blown that 27-point lead in the fourth quarter and eventually lost that series in seven games. And I think every Grizzly fan just had that bitterness kind of in their memory. So when we were able to, you know, when we actually fell down 2-0 against the Clippers in this series, we dropped the first two games, and then we were able to just have a backdoor sweep four straight. And even though Blake Griffin was technically injured, I don't feel – you know, that had any impact on how great the moment was to win that game against the Clippers. And so I always remember this. The biggest thing about that game, other than the fact that we won and knocked off the Clippers to go to then face the Thunder, was the fact at the end of the game that Chris Paul got ejected. And then Z-Bo actually got ejected as well. But I've gone back and watched. I mean, I was at the game in person, so I've had to go back and watch on YouTube to see what it was like on TV. And I've probably watched it 100 times, because I think it's just so funny to see Z-Bo barking at DeAndre Jordan and everybody on the Clippers bench as he leaves the court after being ejected. Tony Allen runs up to him and he's popping his Memphis across the you know, his jersey with the Memphis across the chest, and the Forum is just going crazy. Everybody that game was chanting whoop that trick, or whoop that clip for that game. I just remember that being one of the most fun games to ever be at, to knock off the Clippers to knock them off in the form to go on and move on into the next round of the playoffs. It was just one of the most exciting games I've ever been to. Even more so than I think the game against the Spurs. They're very close. They're memorable in different ways. But being able to knock off the Clippers in the fashion that we did was just it was just the most memorable moment for me as a Grizzly fan.
I agree completely. That night on Beal afterwards was awesome. It was amazing. It was a great time.
Yeah, it was an insane party.
I think I was in the middle of it. I may have hugged you blindly at 4 a.m., Grant, but that's a story for another time. But no, I agree with you completely. I was there in person as well, again, sitting up top, just enjoying every minute of it. It was a great experience. And, you know, maybe not the most meaningful victory in their time in the history of Memphis, of the Grizzlies here in Memphis, but to me, the most memorable for sure. Well, Grant, do you have anything that you want to add as we wrap up this week's editions of the Locked On Grizzlies podcast?
Man, I had a lot of fun this week hopping on the podcast with you. It was a great time. Hopefully we can do it again sometime in the future. If you are a Locked On Grizz Patreon member, be on the lookout. I've actually got an article that's going to be coming out soon. It's actually really cool, really interesting. I had an interview with Tom O'Grady. If you do not know who Tom O'Grady is, Tom O'Grady was the NBA's creative director during the 90s. He actually was with the NBA from 1990 to 2003. So when we were talking about all those jerseys from the 90s, he actually was the guy that was he had his hands on every single branding of those teams in the 90s. He's actually the guy who created the Vancouver Grizzlies branding. So he created the logo. He created the jersey. Everything that you see from that Vancouver era was Tom and his team. And so I was able to get in contact with Tom, and he was really excited and very kind to be able to chat with me and just answer a bunch of questions that I had just kind of about the history of the Vancouver Grizzlies branding. But he also got into a lot of just really, really neat and interesting stuff about just the NBA in general with the kind of the fashion, I guess, of the 90s era. And it was a really good conversation. So I'm looking forward to that going onto the Patreon page. So if you're a member, be on the lookout for that. But if not, make sure you sign up for the Patreon page, Locked On Grizz, because it's going to be a fun article to read.
For Grant Hall, my name is Sean Coleman. We can't thank you enough for giving us the opportunity to talk with you this week. Mark will be back next week. I do know that after talking with Mark some, things will be ramping up here as they get ready for the season. Hopefully me and Grant will make appearances sometime soon. When we do, we'll be glad to talk with you again. But can't thank you enough for listening to this edition of the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. All right, we're good. This thing's just being difficult tonight, but good job, man. I'll talk to you here soon, okay?
All right, man. Appreciate it.